Can you go? On? Could I get everybody's attention so we can get started? Could I get everybody's attention for a minute, please? Thank you. I just wanted to tell all you guys thanks again very much for coming to this year's annual meeting, making this all possible. We certainly couldn't do it without our members. Also wanted to pay a special thanks to BASF for putting on the keynote luncheon and flipping the bill for it. Kent, would you mind standing up for a second? BASF was kind enough to flip the bill for it. So a little bit about, I guess, our speaker. He's without a doubt one of the funniest and most original professional speakers providing corporate content today. He's also the founder of Empower Resources, a company dedicated to providing growth resources for business and individuals. He also has 20 years of full-time experience as a motivational speaker and comedian. He's also the author of several books, including The Seven Powers of Success, and I'm Not Crazy, But I Might Be a Carrier. He's also produced and performed two full-length comedy videos, fully animated, and I'm not just saying it. I actually watched him on YouTube. He's a pretty funny guy. Also, because you guys are a special group of people, me and Shelley spent a lot of time kind of looking around, trying to find the funniest guy we could find, and we found him. Unfortunately, he was busy, so we got stuck with Charles. So, you guys want to please give me a hand in warming, giving him a warm welcome, Charles Marshall.
All right, Byron. How about a hand of applause for my opening act? How did he do? My name is Charles Marshall, and I am excited about being here. Are you feeling good today? Awesome. I thought I might just tell you a little bit about myself as we get started. But before we get started, I have a special surprise for you. As a special treat for you today, I went to extra trouble and extra effort and prepared absolutely no PowerPoint presentation for you. Some people are excited about that. I thought I might just tell you a little bit about myself. I am a family man. Do we have any family folks in here at all? Any family? Not a lot of enthusiasm about this right here. Yeah, whatever. I guess it's on my mind because we just celebrated my son's birthday a couple of weeks ago, and he is really into superheroes. That's what he likes. He likes all the superhero movies like Batman and Spider-Man and Superman and the Avengers. So what we thought we would do for his birthday is we would get him all the action figures. We got them all for him, wrapped them individually, and you should have seen his face light up on his birthday. He's tearing into him. He's going, "Oh, Dad, this is so cool. You got me Batman. Oh, Dad, this is so awesome. You got me Thor. You got me the Incredible Hulk." And immediately he starts playing with them. He starts making them fight one another. He goes, "Dad, what would happen if Spider-Man fought Thor, and then maybe Thor could fight Batman?" And then he sees me over there, and he starts playing, attacking me with them. And you know what you do when you're a parent. You kind of play along, right? So I'm running around the house. He's chasing me. I'm going, "Oh, don't get me, Batman. Don't get me, Spider-Man." He's coming after me going, "Ah." And he'd be so cute, but he's like 22 years old. So I just, like, "Come on, son, get a job. You can do this." Birthdays are a sore subject with me. I am well into my 50s now, and it can be intimidating, but being a motivational speaker, I realized that knowledge is power, so I educated myself about it, and I found out there are two things that happen to you when you get into your 50s. The first one is you lose your short-term memory. It's gone. You forget words and phrases that you just said. You don't even remember that you just said them. The second thing that happens to you is you lose your short-term memory. You forget words and phrases. Some of the younger people looking at me going, Oh, poor thing, it's happening to him right now. Doesn't even know it. So, I'm excited to be here. I flew in yesterday. Does anybody in here fly very much, maybe in your job or maybe on vacation? Has anybody in here ever been on a plane before? Let's try that. Anybody ever seen a picture of an airplane? How about that? Couple of people. That's awesome. I flew in yesterday to talk to you guys to do this specific thing. I'm doing a program for you today called If You're Going to Lead, You Need to Coach. Coach is an acrostic. That means every letter in the word C-O-A-C-H stands for something. Strengthening your influence, effectiveness, and impact as a leader. So I'm going to be talking about five principles that will help you in your leadership today. And we're going to apply this specifically to work, but it could be in any area. It could be your parenting. It could be your community. If you're going to lead, you're going to need to do these five things if you pay attention to them. When somebody doesn't perform, whether at work or in some community way, there are only three reasons why they aren't performing. Number one, it's a competency issue. They just don't have the chops to get it done. That doesn't mean they're dumb. It doesn't mean that they're stupid. Doesn't mean that they're uneducated. It means that they just don't have the ability to do that job right there. I hired a lovely lady who was a little older back in the early 2000s to work in my office on the computer. She was re-entering the marketplace after being a stay-at-home mom for years. She wasn't familiar with computers, and she struggled through her probation period. She was a very bright lady. She might have done well if I'd had a different kind of position, maybe a phone position for her or some sort of accounting position, but she was doing marketing research, and after the 90-day period, we had to transition her out. It didn't come as a surprise to her. It didn't come as a surprise to us. She was ready for it, and we were ready for it. She knew that she wasn't right for that job. The second reason people don't perform is a character issue. This is a tough one to interview. It's hard because everybody presents themselves well when you're interviewing them. But you can usually tell, I can usually tell, after I get them in my office maybe about 2 to 4 months, and I can tell if there's an issue there. What do I mean by character? Well, they might not have a work ethic. We used to have a lady that worked for us. She was also an older lady. I used to kid with my wife, only with my wife, not other employees of mine. But I would kid with my wife that you could get a UPS box, a shipment in, and you could put it right in front of her desk, in between her person and her computer screen, and she would have worked around it for 2 weeks. She would have just, you know, people like that. She just would have found a way, and then her answer was always the same. When you said, "Well, did you take care of this?" Her answer was always, "Oh, did you want me to? Oh, I could if you wanted me to. I will. Oh, yeah, I'll do that if you want me to." It was a work ethic problem. She just wanted to show up and do as much as she had to and no more. The third reason people don't perform is a coaching problem. They need more training. They need some of what you have. They need some of you to rub off on them. They need you to mentor them. I had a lady in my office, and she had the intelligence, she had a work ethic, she had the ability, but she just needed training. And by the time we got finished with her training, and the training was ongoing, she could do her job better than I could do her job. Does that make sense? So we're going to talk about five things. Each letter stands for something. C-O-A-C-H. The C stands for communicate. Do you communicate your vision to the people in your organization? We're going to talk about how important vision is. The O stands for, do you open yourself to input from others? John and I over at lunch, we're talking about the importance and of being open to hearing what other people have to say and how that really can transform your organization if you are open, and how it can kill your organization if you aren't. The A stands for affirm. Do you affirm the players on your team with positive reinforcement? People, especially today, especially with millennials, you hear a lot of talk about how to motivate and how to retain millennials. Affirmation is important. But just as important is the C, correcting undesirable behavior without alienating members of your team. And last, the H, holding yourself to a higher standard. So let's talk about communicating. Everything you do is communicating, right? Everything, if you're in a relationship, do we have any married people in here at all? Even less enthusiasm than the family question. Did you see that? Can I brag to you for a second? My wife and I just celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary. And it's so funny now being at this place in life because people are coming up and asking us what the secret of a long marriage is. And it's not a secret. I'll tell you what it is. My wife and I go out on a date every single week. No matter what. We make it a priority to go out on a date. Oh no, not with each other. Is that what you thought? No. She's not going to do that. I'm kidding. I treat my wife right. I wanted to take her out to a fancy dinner the other night, so we were at the Denny's. Do y'all have those in your area? We come out of the restaurant after enjoying a sumptuous meal. We run into some friends of ours, and they're like, "Whoa, Charles, what are you doing here? You normally don't spend this kind of money. Wow, Daddy Warbucks, look at you." And I'm like, "I know, but it's my anniversary, and I know how to treat my lady." Because I'm all gangsta thug when I'm not doing this gig. You feel me, Randy? You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, you're there, I'm there. Hashtag the gangsta. All right. This lady walks up to, after we finish our meal, she walks up to my wife in kind of a nasty tone, I thought. Looks right at her and went, "So, how do you like having a husband after 30 years?" How many of y'all know that would make me a little nervous? Would you be a little nervous with that question? But listen, and I'm not picking on the ladies here. I'm just saying some people could learn so much from the way my wife answered that question. Because instead of griping and complaining about her guy, my wife chose to honor me in front of all of our friends, and her answer meant so much to me. I wanted to share it with you today. Get this, she says she likes having a husband so much, she is thinking about getting another one. Which I thought, I know, it's a here, go ahead, let it out, big fella. Let it out. Ain't no shame. Go ahead. There you go. Feels good, doesn't it? Are you communicating? What should you communicate? You should communicate your vision. Are you communicating your vision? Vision is just simply seeing the end from the beginning. It's a skill set. The discipline of seeing the end from the very beginning. Are you communicating your vision? I wish I'd had more vision when I first got married. Not to stop me from getting married, but to keep from messing up. When we first got married, my wife had a cat. Do we have any cat owners in here? Any cat owners at all? Yes. How many do you have, ma'am? One? That is the correct answer. I'm kidding. Anybody? Let's find out who has the most number of cats, and I'll give you a book. Who has more than one? Anybody in here? You have? How many do you have, sir? Two. We're going to eke our way up the ladder here. Anybody more with more than two? Anybody more with? Does he get it? Now you're just scared to death after the joke that I told her about the cat. Who has more than two? Anybody in here? Is he my winner? Okay. He gets my first copy of The 7 Powers of Success. Give him a hand. That's awesome. That's wonderful. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you stepping up. I love step up people. Just go ahead and take control. My wife had a cat. She loved this cat. She owned this cat for 12 years before we got married. This cat was like her baby. When she went to business functions like this, she would call home. The cat's name was Fluffy. She would call home and ask, not Charles, how are you doing? She'd call home and say, "Hey, honey, how's Fluffy doing?" How many of y'all know if your wife wants to know how her cat's doing, you better come up with an answer. I'd be like, "Oh, he's doing fine. She goes, "Oh, really? What's he up to?" He's watching Wheel of Fortune. One day, I'm talking about lack of vision, I called home and she said, "Hey, honey, how's Fluffy?" I said, "Fluffy's dead." Lack of vision, right? She goes, "What do you mean he's dead?" I said, "What I mean by dead is he doesn't have a pulse. He's no longer in the land of the living. He has ceased to exist." How many of y'all know I didn't really answer my wife that way? You know how you can tell? Because I'm still alive today. I go, honey, he died. I don't know what to tell you. She goes, is that how you're going to tell me that my baby died? That you're just going to blurt it out like that? I go, well, how would you have wanted me to tell you? She said, you could have softened it. I said, well, how do you soften dead? She said, yeah, I'll tell you how. The first time I called, you could have said, the cat is up on the roof and we cannot get him down. I go, yeah, I could have said that. She said, the second time I called, you could have said, we called the fire department. They crawled out on the roof. They were reaching for him. He got spooked. He plummeted off. He lost his footing. He plummeted to the ground. I go, yeah. She goes, the third time I called, you could have said, we called the emergency veterinary clinic. They sent a live flight helicopter to our cul-de-sac. They life flighted him into surgery and operated on him for over 5 hours. And I'm sorry, but Fluffy has passed on to the great beyond. I go, wow. Because she's trying to communicate with me, right? She's trying to tell me something. I go, I blew it, honey. I am so sorry. I promise I'll never do that again. She goes, you really hurt my feelings. I said, well, never again. I've learned something. I'm going to be a good husband. I'm going to be a good partner for you. And I'm not going to do that anymore. She goes, I forgive you. I don't want to talk about it. She goes, how is my mom taking the news? I said, your mom is up on the roof and we cannot get her down. Mother-in-law joke, come on in here. Mother-in-law joke, there we go. Vision, how important is vision? It's everything. Listen, when I wrote this book right here, this came out in 2013, I did a fair amount of press for it. I did print interviews and a lot of radio interviews. And one of the questions they asked me, it's called The Seven Powers of Success. And one of the questions they asked me is, Charles, where did you get all that success information? Where did you learn it? Can I just tell you, it was real, real easy. When you are a keynote speaker for 25 years, let me tell you where they seat you. They seat you right at the front of the room with the leaders. You get to sit down with the CEO, with the president, with the directors. That's who they seat you with. And when I was sitting with them for years, I made it my objective to sit there and interview them, say, hey, what have you done, Mike, that has been successful in your organization? Ben, tell me about your success journey. Larry, tell me what you have learned on the way. John, tell me, how did you get here to this place? And almost every time, it was almost 100% of the time, one word was mentioned. Vision. Charles, we had a vision for where we wanted our company to be. We wanted to be the industry leader. We wanted to be the best in customer service. We wanted to be the choice of employment in our area. And here's why it's important. If you don't know what your vision is, most likely you will miss it and wind up in the land of mediocrity, right? You need to pay attention and make sure you know what your vision is. Now, I mentioned mediocrity. Let me just tell you, stop right there. The opposite of success is not failure. Cannot be. But first, we have to define success, don't we? What is success? What does success mean? A lot of people think success means being rich and famous. It is not. Success, the best definition of success is the process of fulfilling your potential, growing where you are planted, using your gifts and abilities. What do I mean by gifts? Everybody in here has a gift. You can look right at some people and tell that they have a gift. You can look at it. Some people have the gift of intelligence. They radiate intelligence. Like this lady right here. Ma'am, could you just stand up with me real quick? You can tell she has the gift of intelligence. Do you guys see it? Back me up here. Do you see it or not? There it is. She has the gift of intelligence. Other people have the gift of extreme athleticism. They have honed their bodies into machine-like perfection. Matt, stand up with me real quick. Go ahead, give him one of these. One of these. There you go. Y'all see it? Other people, and this sounds so horrible, I hate even saying this, other people have the gift of extreme good looks. They are just loaded with, okay, all right, no, that makes sense. Obviously, yes, obviously. There it is. Right. When you first came in, I was like, what is Brad Pitt doing here? What? The best definition of success is fulfilling your potential using your gifts and abilities. And good-looking people do have it easier in life, don't they? Would you agree with me on that? Oh, my word. They are treated preferentially. People are, they kowtow to them. Everybody's so nice to them. I see this on airplanes all the time. I'll just tell you this. I see this when we're boarding airplanes. You have some 20-something cutie pie struggling to stow her clutch purse in the overhead. And then you have like four or five busted old dudes jump up to help her. Have y'all seen that? I didn't mean to motion to you guys specifically when I said busted old dudes. That was just... But you see that? I don't know what they think's going to happen. They got their own little program going on right here. I don't know what they think is going to happen. Like she's going to turn to one of them and go, "Oh, this is so fortunate because I've been struggling with severe daddy issues my whole life." It's pathetic. It is pathetic. It's so pathetic. It really is. I've gotten to the point where I don't even jump up and help anymore. You know what I'm talking about, dog? You know what I'm saying? You know what? Just forgive me the knuckle pound on that. You deserve to win a book. Give him a hand for stepping up for me. There you go. Awesome. So, vision. Do you communicate your vision? If you do not take the time to decide, to define what your vision is, you are risking taking a long, circuitous route in life and driving right by it. You want to drive right towards your vision. Identify that vision. If you don't want know what you're looking for, you will miss it. Give you an example. When I grew up, I was in high school and junior high band. Do we have any former band people in here? Any band people? Raise your hand. Yep. What'd you play, sir? Drums. Look here. Look. Fellow drummer in the house. Can I give you a handshake? That's awesome. What did you play, ma'am? Clarinet. Anybody else? Anybody else? Oh, did what? One person back. Yes, sir. What did you play? Saxophone is a cool instrument. I played the drums, and one of my best friends played the tuba. We started talking. Turns out that we both like rock and roll, so I bought a drum set. He bought a bass guitar, and we formed a little rock and roll band right there in Clinton, Mississippi, and got to play a few gigs and felt like rock stars for a few days in our high school experience. His name was John Hicks. That name's important. I'll come back to it in just a second. John Hicks. And John and I would co-write songs together. He would write the lyrics, and I also play guitar, and I would write the music for it. Then we graduated, and then John and I moved about 100 miles south and attended the University of Southern Mississippi, where we were roommates with a couple of the guys that were in the bands, and we did it again. We formed another band, and we got to gig. Another thing that John and I had in common was that we loved movies. We would trade movie trivia all the time. We would ask each other about movies. Well, after college, John went his way and I went my way until the advent of Facebook, right? And then now you're back in touch with people who you'd hoped you'd never even hear from again, right? Well, John wasn't one of those people. I wanted to hear from John, and John and I caught up, and then that was pretty much it. Once you do the catch up, you're pretty much done. You both have different lives, but then because we interacted a little bit, Facebook threw up things that John was tagged in, and something popped up in my feed one time. It was a little movie clip from a movie, and it said, "Thinking about you when I see this." And John replied, "Thanks for remembering. That makes me smile." And I thought, I didn't know what it was. The movie clip was from a movie called "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?" Raise your hand if you've ever heard that. Raise it up high so I can see it. If you've ever heard that movie. For those who haven't, it's a movie starring George Clooney, who plays Emmett, an escaped convict in Depression era South Mississippi specifically. And he is traveling through the South on the run with two other cohorts and having different adventures. One of his first adventures is he and the gang go to a radio station and record a song as the Soggy Bottom Boys. Does anybody in here, raise your hand, don't blurt it out, anybody in here know the name of the song that the Soggy Bottom Boys recorded? Anybody in here? I saw one hand. Yes, sir. Man of Constant Sorrow, you're getting my book. I'm not crazy, but I might be a carrier. Get this. Give Corey a hand. That's awesome, sir. Appreciate you. Yes. They recorded a song, I'm a Man of Constant Sorrow. And then they went on throughout the rest of the movie and pretty much forgot about that. But what they didn't know is, unbeknownst to them, that song was receiving airplay and becoming a big hit, so that when they were on stage in a climactic scene at the end of the movie, in disguise, up on the stage, they started playing the song, Man of Constant Sorrow, and everybody in the audience recognized that song. The whole audience is electrified. They suddenly come alive. They start clapping along. One redneck in the back of the room sticks his head up above the crowd, and I'm going to modify this line somewhat for public consumption, but he sticks his head up above the crowd and goes, "Hot dang, it's the Soggy Bottom Boys." Anybody remember that? Big, that was supposed to be one of the biggest, like 200 lines in movies from all times. Well, then the Soggy Bottom Boys go on and play that song. And I found out when I was listening to that song that I actually liked that kind of music. It turns out that that's not a bad form of music. I had dismissed it for years because I'm a rock and roll guy. And I just dismissed it, but then I heard it in that movie, and I go, okay, I get it. I get it now. That bluegrass, that's some artistry and some musicianship, and that's its own form. I get that. So I've watched that clip maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 times, or I've had it on just to hear that song. I've watched the movie sometimes in part or whole, maybe 5, 6 times over the years. Well, that was the clip that John was tagged in, and I had no idea why. So I started watching it again. I thought, maybe is John an extra or something? What is it? And so I watched it frame by frame, paused it, played it, didn't see anything, played it again, and then I played it after the third time. I suddenly saw it. For the first time, I saw that redneck in the back of the room that says that famous line is none other than my old bandmate and my best friend in high school, John Hicks. That's John. He didn't get a credit for the line because the Screen Actors Guild says you have to have two spoken lines in a movie to get credit. But on a little video on my website, charlesmarshall.net, and you have my business card right there. Go check it out. Business card has my website on it. There's a video called The Power of Vision. And we put John's picture right up next to John's picture in my band, right up next to John's picture in the movie. But I never saw it. I never saw it. Why did I not see it? Help me out here. Did I make the argument that John and I were pretty good friends? Let me see. Yes, yes, yes. Did I make the argument that I had seen the movie a few times? Yes, but I still missed it. Why did I miss it? Because I wasn't looking for it. If you do not know what your vision is, you're going to miss it. You need to define what your vision is, and then you need to communicate that vision regularly. Charles, how often should I communicate that vision? All the time, to your staff, to your members, to your team members. What if I'm not the owner of the company? What if I'm just a team? Well, then communicate your vision for your team. We are going to be the best in customer service. If you have the power to make this decision, we are going to be the number one employer in our area. And we're going to be the place that everybody wants to work. I did an event last year for a company called Mears Plumbing. They have 120 trucks. They're in Florida. They have 120 plumbing trucks always out on the road. And the owner, Mr. Mears, said that they never have a problem with having people to hire, quality people apply for their position. You know why? Because they've worked hard to be the place where everybody wants to work. Their annual meeting, they It's like Christmas morning. Everybody walks away with a prize. They are givers to their community. Every point they hit in why someone would want to work for them. And it's a plumbing company. You see what I'm saying? That could be you. Your company could be the company that everybody wants to go to. It's up to you. There is no right answer. There is no right vision. What are you going to do with that vision? So first you need to communicate the vision. Then you need to open yourself to input from others. That's hard. Because you have to admit you're wrong sometimes. But it'll kill your business if you just surround yourself. If you surround yourself with people who only tell you what you want to hear and don't challenge you, then you're going to be a weak leader. You're not going to grow as a leader. You have to open yourself to input. I learned this when I first got married, that you have to be willing to be wrong. When my wife and I first got married, we were sitting at a restaurant and we were sitting right next to the kid, to the table with the noisy kids. Have you ever sat at that table before? How many of you have ever been that table before? How about that? We didn't have kids at that point, so we were kind of still sensitive to that. We were a little bit judgmental about it. After you have the kids, after you are at that table, when you hear the kids that are noisy, you're like, oh yeah, I hope that works out. But I mean, you're not judgmental. Well, there was this table next to us that's really, it was with some rowdy kids. I leaned over to my wife and said, wow, those kids are really shousy, aren't they? She goes, what? I go, those kids over there, they're really rowdy. They're noisy. She goes, oh yeah, I guess they are. A couple weeks later, we are at the apartment. We lived in an apartment back then, and right outside the window, some kids are making a bunch of noise. I said to my wife, I said, wow, those kids are really shousy. She goes, now you keep using that word, shousy. I've never heard that word before. I go, yes, you have. It means rowdy, boisterous, obnoxious, loud. She goes, no, I said, yep. She goes, I don't think that's a word. I go, listen, my mom used it with us all the time. She would say, you kids need to quit being so shousy. My wife said, listen, I went to school for journalism. Words. Nothing but words. I studied words. I grew up playing Scrabble. I'm telling you, shousy is not a word. Not only that, I worked for a major Atlanta newspaper for 5 years before we got married. And I'm telling you, shousy is not a word. I said, I will bet you $1 million that is a word. See, that's what, see, that I love that. See, he's going to take that bet. And it's great. We don't bet real money, by the way. We just bet. It's just a play thing we do. And we don't even keep score. Sometimes she wins, sometimes I lose. It's all, it doesn't even. But this time, and it's great to get the other person to back down, but this time she went, I will take that bet. And that's when I felt my very first little tremor of doubt in my position. I said, fine, all right, let's go look it up. So I went over to the computer and I started Googling it. I'm kidding you. There was no Google. There were no computers. We could barely send smoke signals back then. We got out the 3-inch thick Merriam-Webster dictionary, put it down, and I started looking it up. S-H-O-U-S-H-O-U-S-E. No shousy in the book. My wife, she's the opposite of me. I'm loud. I'm kind of loud. I'm out there. My wife's very sweet and quiet. I wish she were loud because it'd make it easier on me because she's just very sweet. I'm looking it up and she goes, so honey, are you finding that word? So no, then she goes, wonder what it means when there isn't a word in the dictionary. Does that mean that? What does that mean? I said, fine. That sent me over the edge. I said, fine. I'm calling mama. Yeah. And I said, oh, and by the way, honey, you talk about your little journalism thing. By the way, my mom used to be a school teacher, an English school teacher. So she is about to take you to school, girlfriend. That's what's going to happen right now. She said, fine. So I picked up the phone. I started dialing. She goes, did you remember to dial the one? After about 20 minutes, my mom gets on the phone, answers the phone. I go, hey, mom, it's your favorite son. No, it's Charles. Listen. I need you to settle an argument with your daughter-in-law. I need you to tell her she's wrong. My wife said, well, I'll try. What are you arguing about? I said, I need you to tell her that shousey is a real word. My mom laughed. She goes, well, she goes, it was a real word to us. I thought, well, hold on, Mom, what do you mean? She goes, when you kids were growing up, we lived down the street from a family that had 10 kids. They were out of control. They were wild all the time. They were always in our yard. They were always yelling. The name of that family was the Shouse family. So whenever you kids would act up, we would say, you kids need to quit being so shousey. I said, Mama, hold on. So you're telling me that for 28 years, not only for 28 years have I been walking around using a made-up word, but also I just lost $1 million. But how many of y'all think that's a pretty awesome word and you're going to use it from now on? Let me see your hand. Yes. My hope is I'm going to get that $1 million back one day. Are you open to hearing what other people have to say? If you aren't, then you're gonna stifle your organization. I read a meme the other day. It said the best leaders don't create great followers. They create more leaders. Your objective is to empower people. The takeaway there is be open to the input so that you can encourage growth. Then affirm. Hey, so we talked about C, communicate to your team. Communicate what? Communicate your vision. Communicate your expectations. Oh, open yourself to input. And then A, affirm the people on your team with positive reinforcement. You need to practice speaking reinforcement to the people. You can't, listen, I'm old school too. I get it. And we'll get to the part where you have to be direct with people. But with this workforce now, when I grew up, you got a job and you held on to it like grim death. Anybody else grow up in that environment, right? This generation doesn't feel that way. They feel like I can always get another job. So you do have to create, if you're interested in employee retention, you do have to create an environment that people want to be there. And that means one of the chief things that is important to this generation coming up behind my generation is affirmation, knowing that they did a good job, knowing that they are making an impact, knowing that they are changing a little bit of their world. I would not be here today if I did not have people affirming my life. Raise your hand if at some time during either elementary, junior high, or high school, you had, let's say, a teacher invest in you over and above a little bit. Can I see your hand? Let me see your hand. Keep them about there. Keep them about there. Almost everybody in here. I grew up, for me, junior high was a very, very difficult time. Middle school was a battleground. Was that hard for anybody else in here? And also, I grew up poor. Did anybody in here grow up poor? Let me see your hand. Did you have to wear hand-me-downs? I wore hand-me-downs and all I had was older sisters. It was... You try looking tough on the playground wearing a yellow sundress and white sandals, guys, you can't do it. People say, Charles, is that just a joke or did you really do that? Yes, I literally wore my older sister's clothes to school in the early 70s. I remember my mom holding up a pair of my older sister's pants, talking to me about wearing them to school, and this was the 70s, so they had a flower design on them all the way down the legs. And my mom's saying, listen, you can wear these, nobody will notice. Well, guess what? They noticed. Fortunately, middle school kids are known for their compassion and understanding toward one another. But into that scenario arrived a hero by the name of Mr. Mullins. Mr. Mullins was my junior high band teacher, and he is one of the reasons that I am able to be here today and have the confidence to hold this microphone, because I had somebody encourage me when I was down and out and when I was nothing. I had no money, I had no looks, I had no position in town, I had a horrible self-esteem, but Mr. Mullins, a band teacher, encouraged me and gave me a chance to have another chance to play the drums. I tried out for drums at first, and I didn't make it. So I defaulted to a school-provided instrument called a baritone. Not a bad instrument, but it just wasn't my heart. 6 weeks into my seventh grade, I went to Mr. Mullins and said, "Mr. Mullins, I need to quit band." He goes, "Why is that?" I said, I don't like my instrument." He goes, "Is that the one you tried out for?" I said, "No, sir." But I blew the tryout. We had six drumming positions open, but three of them were already taken because our school had a policy that if the student owns the instrument already, then they are instantly qualified for that instrument. We're not going to make the parents buy another instrument. So there were three spots open, and I blew it. But Mr. Mullins, I wanted to play drums so bad, so I guess, and I didn't make it, so I got to quit. He said, "Marshall, be in my," he called me by my last name, "Marshall, be in my office this afternoon." That's it, no preamble, nothing. So I showed up to his office, and his office was about the size of this stage area right here. It's about the size of a Gemini space capsule. And I showed up that day, and I went to his office, and he showed me how to hold a pair of drumsticks like this right here. And I went into a time warp. I don't know if I was there for 2 minutes or for 20 minutes or for 30 minutes because I was so scared and so nervous. But Mr. Mullins would play a little pattern on the edge of his desk, and he would ask me to repeat that pattern. He'd play something, and it started off simple at first. And then on the other side of the desk, I would play it over here. Then it would get a little bit more complicated. A little bit more complicated. And then eventually, I'm kidding, that never happened. At the end of it, Mr. Marshall said, "All right," Mr. Mullen said, "All right, Marshall, thank you for coming in, go on home." That was it, didn't tell me anything. And so I went on home. When I got home, Mom was standing at the garage door to the carport. She had been standing there yelling at some neighborhood Chelsea kids. And she saw me coming up the driveway. And she said these words. She goes, "What did you do?" Well, I was kind of a mischievous kid. I've been doing a lot of stuff, so I didn't give her a list. You know what I'm saying? I said, "What do you mean, Mom?" She goes, "I just got a call from Mr. Mullins. He said that you tried out for drums. Is that right?" I go, "Yes, ma'am, I did." She goes, "Mr. Mullins said you have a natural talent, that we need to get you a drum set immediately." Well, we didn't have the money. $125 for a new drum or a new baritone back then. That's why I wound up playing a school-supplied instrument, because that was like $1,000 to us back then. We didn't have the money, that kind of money. But such was Mr. Mullins' belief in me. It ignited my mom's belief in me, and my parents went down to downtown Jackson, Mississippi, and plunked to Werlein's Music and plunked down $25 and agreed to pay $5 a week for a brand new Ludwig concert drum with stand, case, sticks, practice pad, and instruction book. And do you know, because of Mr. Mullins him challenging me, even though the other kids had a whole year, the other six kids, I was the seventh drummer, the other six kids had a whole year head start on me. Within 1 month, I had earned first chair, and I retained that first chair throughout my junior high years. People, you say, "Why is that, Charles? Because you were so talented and awesome?" Yeah, kind of. I'm kidding. No, it's because I had somebody believe in me. I had a Mike in my corner. I had a Ben right there. I had a Brian who got behind me and said, "Charles, you got this." Was I really that good? I don't know. But I held on to those drumsticks like a Dumbo's feather. And if Mr. Mullins believed in me, maybe he knew something. Maybe I was somebody. And all of a sudden, I was a drummer. So my question to you is right here. We're talking about affirming, using your words to empower the people around you. I've done that in my life. I made it a point in my career and in my office. And sometimes, let me just be straight up with you, sometimes you see an immediate return. Sometimes, it's like with Mr. Mullins, they come back years later. I've had employees come back to me and say, "Charles, just want to thank you for teaching me how to work in an office, teaching me marketing. I have a business now that I'm using those same principles. Thank you. I've gone back to my mentors and saying, I've looked them up and said, hey, thank you. So my question is, I'm going to need a raised hand here. Raise your hand if you yourself see that you have the possibility, you have the potential to be a life-changing influence on your team like Mr. Mullins. Let me see your hand. You, sir, I saw your hand go up first, so you are the one that win the drumsticks. How about that? Give him a hand. We have a new drummer in the room. For two reasons. I wish drumsticks are objects that I believe are innately cool. I wish I had a pair for everybody in here, because in my opinion that everybody should own a pair of drumsticks, at least one pair of drumsticks in their life. That's, you just ought to have them. But the second reason is I want to remind you that you are the Mr. Mullins, that you have the ability to affirm the team members on your team. So first we have communicating your vision and your passion and your expectations to your team members. Open yourself to instruction. You affirm, but then if we're being honest, you have to correct too. It's not all sunshine, candy cane, and roses and affirmation and nice words. You do have to follow up with instruction. When do you say something? I have a rule right here. Once is an accident when somebody messes up. Twice is a coincidence. Three times is a pattern. You've got to address it. Watch for it, and you're seeing it over and over, and you should communicate it very clearly. Have them write it down. You write it down. You must correct them. You must step up and communicate to them what they're doing wrong. But friends, can I just tell you this? You got to be nice about doing it. You just have to be nice. Just because you work with people and you're focused on your vision doesn't mean that they're going to get that vision right away. You've got to correct with and give them dignity and correct in a nice way, even when it's bad news. In 1987, I was driving down the road in my 1976 Ford Pinto. For those of you who don't know what a Ford Pinto was, it was an upscale sports car. Something like a Ferrari or a Maserati today. And I was driving down the road in my 1976 Ford Pinto, and I went through an intersection and I was T-boned by a 1980 Volvo four-door sedan, instantly breaking four of my ribs, separating my AC joint, and turning my left shoulder into hamburger when the driver's side window shattered. I managed to pull it over, and then brave people ran over to the car. They pulled me out the passenger side door. They dragged me about 25 or 30 feet away from the Pinto, because one of the bonus features of the Pinto was that they would burst into spontaneous flame with little or no reason. A strong wind. And as I'm laying there, it's an exciting time to be alive, wasn't it? My generation, we didn't need extreme sports. We had Pintos. Every day you got behind that wheel, you knew it would be your last. It could be your last, right? And as I was laying there on the ground, I remember only thinking two things in my head. I remember when I was growing up, my first thought was, I remember when I was growing up, my mama told me to make sure you always wear clean underwear every day, because you might get in a wreck and have to go to the hospital. So as I'm laying there, I'm trying to think about that. I remember I put on a clean pair that morning, but I'm wondering if after the wreck, they are still clean. It was a heck of a wreck. It was a doozy is what I'm saying. Other thing I'm sitting there thinking is I realize that for my day to get better, I am going to need some pain medication. Have you ever been there? Well, you've been hurting so bad, you know. Ladies, if you've ever had a baby, that's the kind of pain. It's an intense pain when you're hurt and you need some pain medication. So After they couldn't give me any pain medication in the ambulance, they couldn't give me any in the ER because they had to test me and examine me, and they needed me lucid. So finally they gave me, after 2.5-3 hours, they gave me some hospital grade pharmaceuticals. Has anybody in here had some hospital grade pharmaceuticals? Can I see your hand? No, I meant legally. Hold on. Legally, has anybody? No, okay. You got something to sell. You might want to keep that to yourself, Matt. Talk to me later. I'm just saying. And finally, oh my goodness, I'm feeling a little bit better. Pain, when you're in that kind of pain, it doesn't take away the pain. It does. You're still in pain, but instead of the pain being right up on you, it just, the pain takes a few steps back and you don't care as much that you're in pain. Right at that very moment, into my room walked Nurse Ratched. You know the reference, One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest? Just Sergeant Major, she took two of her hands and she started pressing on my bladder right like this. Just press her. Didn't say boo. Didn't say hello. Didn't say how are you. Didn't say anything to me. She just walked over and started pressing on my bladder. Does that seem weird to anybody else in here but me? That seems weird. I didn't know what she was doing. I thought maybe this is how they say hello in hospitals now. Hey, how are you doing? I was like, oh, I'm fine. How are you? I didn't know. She goes, I said, ma'am, what are you doing? She said, I am checking to see if you need to void your bladder. I go, oh, okay. Well, you could have asked me. I don't need to. She goes, sir, you might not know if you need to or not. You might be in shock. I said, no, I'm pretty sure I don't need to go. I felt your presence. I don't need to go. She goes, sir, I'm the medical professional, and it is my learned and experienced position that you need to void your bladder. I said, well, I'm not going to right now. She says, sir, if you don't void your bladder, I'm going to have to cath you. I was like, I don't know what that means. What does that mean? She goes, sir, it stands for catheter. I go, well, I don't know what that means either. So she started explaining it. Okay, you got a little tube, right? Goes down to a little bag, and you take the other end of the tube, and you know what? I think I need to void my bladder now. But it was traumatic. That's what I'm saying. It was a traumatic experience. Even to this day, it affects me. My wife and I are getting ready to go somewhere, and she'll say, honey, do you need to go to the bathroom before we go? I'll say, I don't know, honey. Could you come press? Just tell me. I've lost my confidence. You tell me. My point is, was Nurse Ratched right? Yes, she was. Did she communicate that in a way that made me feel respected? No, she didn't. She was absolutely right, because if I didn't go to the bathroom, my body could go into shock and it could be it could get septic. But my point is that when you correct, you have to do it with dignity. You have to do it still respecting the other person. I heard this one time, to use this formula. It's real easy, and this was given in a parenting context, but I still think it's important. It's called RL times 3 plus NT times 1. RL, I really like. Hey, Matt, thank you for getting that job done today. I really appreciate that. I really like how you quickly got on that job, the alacrity, just throughout the day. Really like her. And then, hey, on the next time you do that, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to do that. Will you do that for me, boss? Okay, got it. So you're going to do that next time, right? All right, right. So that's part of your expectations. That's part of my expectations for you. RL times 3 plus next time, NT times 1. So we've talked about C. Communicating your vision, communicating who we want to be. We've talked about opening yourself to input from others. We talked about A, affirming the members on your team. We talked about C. We talked about C, just making sure that you correct with dignity. And last but certainly not least, H, hold yourself to a higher standard. Can I tell you, what do I mean by character? Well, most of the time we think about character in work ethic or in your giving, but most of the people consider character as integrity, right? Raise your hand if it is important to you that other people keep their word to you. Can I see your hand? Any hands not raised in here? Okay, hold on. Wait, let me ask you this. Let me ask some stipulations. Raise your hand if it's important that other people keep their word to you, even if they're real rich. Is it important? Okay. Why, how about if they're real good looking? Not as many hands that time. You're thinking, how good looking we're talking about. No, it's always important. You expect people to keep their word. I believe that integrity is a good big part of it, but also your service, your customer service ethic. Can I just tell you, as a speaker, I talk about two things, personal development and customer service. This is a personal development program today, but I'm talking to you also about customer service, because your standard, that character, should be service to other people. And here's the ugly secret. If you don't hold that standard as a leader in your group, you can't expect your team to hold that standard. That standard will not be in your group. I love organizations that emulate service. One of those organizations is a company called Chick-fil-A. Has anybody in here ever heard of Chick-fil-A? They just excel in customer service. And everybody has a customer service story. When my kids were 10 and 12, we went into Chick-fil-A and we loaded up the tray with the waffle fries, the Chick-fil-A sandwiches, and four big shakes. This is going to be my big shake because I forgot my water bottle. Four big shakes. And we took them to the table and we put them all that stuff on the table. Within about 3 minutes, maybe less, 30, 45 seconds of being at the table, my son was 10 and he was very demonstrative. He still is demonstrative. Where does he get that from? He's very demonstrative and he's waving his arms and I can just see it happening. His arms going toward that shake and I'm like, no. But his arm hits that shake and boom, shake explosion all over the floor. Defies the law of physics. There's actually more shake on the floor than was in the cup. It's across the restaurant floor, out into the parking lot, into Burger King across the street. Shake for days. My wife and I, we get down there and we start cleaning up the shake. But then out of nowhere materializes the Chick-fil-A mop and bucket brigade. They run out. They start cleaning it up. And they're thanking us. Thank you so much for the opportunity to serve you today. We really appreciate that. We're going, no, thank you. And all together, it's like the team of three people, they all went simultaneously, they went, it's our pleasure, because that's their thing. Meanwhile, the guy who poured the shake is over there pouring another full shake. He walks it over to my son, puts it in front of my son, and kind of consoles him a little bit, said, hey, buddy, don't worry about spilling that. That happens to me 3 or 4 times a day. That would be a pretty good story about service, wouldn't it? But that's only half the story, because about 10 minutes later, we are now almost finished with our meal. My son has sucked down most of the shake when again, boom! Shake explosion all over the place. My wife and I don't even move this time. We're not even believing it. But again, the Chick-fil-A mop and bucket brigade, they run out. I don't even know how they know. Maybe a bat signal goes off in the back or something. But they start cleaning it up and they're thanking us. Thank you so much for this opportunity. We really appreciate this. We're going, oh, we're so sorry. No, we love this. Thank you so much. The only thing that could make this any better is maybe one of your kids had thrown up. Thank you so much. Where did they find these people? Meanwhile, the guy over who poured the shake in the first place pours another full shake. Did I tell you the shake was almost empty? He pours a full shake. He walks it over and puts it in front of my son again. Now I'm thinking, shoot, that boy just got himself a completely new shake. He's going to have a shake in the car. That is amazing. So I took mine. I'm like, oh, no. My shake fell. Better hurry. I'm in danger of being unhappy at Chick-fil-A. So my question to you is pretty straightforward. This one's a little damaged. This one's a little damaged. Sir, Matt, I've just interacted with you the whole time. I think he deserves this book. Are you guys with me on that? There you go, Matt. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. So my question to you is, as a leader, what do you do when the shake hits the floor? Do you go, oh boy, I can't believe you guys can't get this right. We've talked about this. We've talked about this over and over. Can I even count on you guys to just get this one? Or do you get busy? Say, all right, come on, we got this. Come on, we're going to get this cleaned up. Do you set the standard for that service? Do you set the standard for that customer service? Anticipating the need with your client. You say, well, the client needs what? Well, let's go ahead and get it for them. Let's go ahead and take care of them. Let's don't make them ask for it. Let's go ahead and anticipate that need, because you're holding a higher standard in your organization. You are the one that is coaching. You're the one that finds those people that are willing to be coached. And I get it. There are some people who will never get that standard, right? I understand that. They will never get that. When I mention a good company that with whom I've interacted, like Chick-fil-A, I make a point of mentioning their name. But when I have a bad experience with another company, I don't ever mention their name publicly, because I don't want to be the kind of speaker that's petty and just uses my position as a public speaker to get even with companies that treated me wrong. So I'll tell you one just real quick in closing. I needed to rent a car a while back for a family vacation, so I went to Smudget Rental Car. Y'all don't know who I'm talking about, do you? You have no idea. And I went up and I sat in front at the car counter for 2 hours with Chris at Smudget Rental Car at 120 West Pike Street, Lawrenceville, Georgia, 30019, trying to get the kind of car I wanted. And Chris just couldn't have cared less. After about an hour and a half, I forgot about the car. I just tried to make a customer service convert out of Chris. I said, Chris, this is your money, dude. This is how you're setting the standard for your life, how you work, and your trajectory is success. And Chris said, and I quote, he said, customer doesn't pay my paycheck. I took out my phone. I said, you mind if I get your picture real quick? I collect pictures of stupid. Do you mind if I just... Listen, that is my time. You guys have been awesome. Thank you for letting me help you. I appreciate you getting shousy with me today. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate the presentation. A lot of things to learn there. Our next session will start in the next room at 2 o'clock. So, invite you to join us.